I want to start with Sven Berchi. We have talked a lot about Sven, where he fits, does he fit, with Jay Feaster and Brent Sutter, then with Treliving and Bob Hartley. Never found a spot.
Yeah, and I think the risk in trading him is, you know, to me the best comparison is what happened with Nino Niederreiter, another Swiss player who was going through the exact same thing that Berchi went through, which is that, you know, the Islanders wanted him to develop at a regular rate, you know, the Detroit Red Wings model, which is, you know, put a guy in the minors and wait until he's overripe, and when he's ready to come up, he's ready to come up, right? So Detroit has used that model. It's worked with Gustav Nyquist. It's worked with Tomas Tatar, who's had a breakout year. The Islanders tried it with Niederreiter, and the exact same thing that happened with Berchi happened with Niederreiter. He chafed that last year in the minors, basically demanded a trade, said that he wouldn't continue to play for them, and ultimately they ended up trading him to Minnesota in the deal for Cal Clutterbuck, and I think there was something else in it. And in Minnesota, I think he's up to 20 goals this year. Now, you know, right place, right time, because he probably was readier to play in the NHL when Minnesota got him, and, you know, he seems like a decent NHL player, and I really think that the Berchi has a chance to be the same guy. But I don't put any blame on the organization, because they were trying to do the right thing by him. So why is it that both these guys were so impatient? Well, all young players are impatient. I mean, Sam Bennett desperately wanted to be on the NHL roster this year, and ultimately they said, no, you know, it doesn't help your long-term development to be here, to hit the ground running in the middle of a playoff race. Go back to Kingston, develop, you know, find the pace of the game again after missing the whole year, and we'll see a training camp next year. And it's not like teams want their players to succeed, right? They don't want them to fail. I mean, you don't want your players to fail. So I think what they were doing with Berchi was they were saying, you know, you're not ready yet, but at some point you will become ready. And he got impatient and forced their hand, essentially. And so I think they got the best deal they could for him under the circumstances.
Well, I know there were some that were, if not confused and maybe a little upset, that they traded him for a second. He was a first-round pick. But upon finding out that he and his agent had basically asked out, said they weren't going to re-sign, I guess people are a little bit more happy with the return. Let me ask you this, and you already kind of answered it. Should the team have given him more of an opportunity? Did they give him a fair shake in your mind?
I think so, yeah, because I think that what happens in the National Hockey League? I mean, it's a competition for your job every day. I mean, it's the ultimate Darwinian test, you know. And again, you know, if he had been the best forward in the organization, he would be on the NHL roster. You know, you don't. This organization, what's been the motto all year? You know, always earned, never given. Right? I mean, I think that's fair. You know, guys like, you know, they. Devin Setoguchi didn't earn a job that, you know, we haven't seen him in months. And so I think that in his situation, he was not one of the top guys ready to play in the National Hockey League. And it may well be, I mean, you know, the little bit I saw of Emile Poirier looks ahead of Berchi to me right now. You know, again, we just saw glimpses of him. He looks like a real good player and, you know, and came in a later draft, also a first-rounder, but looks like a guy that, you know, in my mind, if I'm projecting, you know, next year's roster, you know, I would have probably had Poirier ahead of Berchi. Could change, you know. I mean, Josh Juris won a spot out of training, a spot on the roster out of training camp when he wasn't even on anybody's horizon. And now, you know, you guys were talking in the last segment about Drew Shore. It'll be interesting to see where they're at with him and if they, you know, if they give him, you know, a 20-game trial at the NHL level. Bottom line is that if he had been ready, if he had been a player that they felt was going to contribute offensively to them, I think he would have been in the lineup. I mean, the offense has dried up in the last little while, and I actually thought that they might have a look at this guy at some point in the final quarter of the season, just because of that, because it looks like they're going to need a little bit of scoring if they want to stay in the playoff race. But I think what you're asking, the second part of your question is that good value for him, and is that enough? And maybe the comparison is, how did Boston or how did Tampa get two second-round picks for Brett Connolly when Calgary could only get one for Sven Berchi? Well, I'm sure it wasn't for a lack of trying. I mean, if they had this demand from Berchi's agent, I think that, you know, lots of teams and every team in the National Hockey League would have been aware that he was available and probably would have understood that they were in a bidding competition of some form. And clearly this was the best return that they could get for him. So, and I guess the only other question is, you know, would you have taken that asset and tried to turn it into, say, a James Wisniewski? You know, because if you look at what Anaheim gave up to get Wisniewski out of Columbus, essentially they gave up one of their top prospects, William Karlsson, the Swedish center that I think a lot of people think is going to play in the National Hockey League. And then it was, you know, a little bit of salary back for Columbus and then a second for a third round pick. So the rest of it is essentially window dressing. Anaheim got probably the best defenseman that got traded yesterday, second or third best defenseman that got traded at the trade deadline. Yandel is obviously the best. But Wisniewski is a guy that has some of those Giordano elements, right? I mean, you know, not huge, but, you know, good puck-moving skills. He probably could have seamlessly slid him into the lineup, right, and put him with Brody and not had to alter the other defense pairs. And then, you know, I mean, he's signed for two more years, pretty big number. But Calgary can afford that number if they'd like the player enough. And maybe you could have got that asset for Berchi and, you know, maybe another swap of picks. But ultimately, what did they decide? You know, they decided that they would prefer to have the picks. They prefer to either draft this summer or see what the value of those picks is closer to the time of the draft. And, you know, we won't know whether that's the right choice until the smoke clears from, you know, the rest of the season and who they get in the draft and, you know, can they flip those picks? And then are those guys NHL players? I mean, you know, we'll be talking about this transaction for 3 to 5 years down the road.
Yeah. I mean, for me, quickly, if I would not, I'd have taken the second round pick and just done the deal they did. If Mark Giordano is healthy and there's no lost season in the balance, then it's like, right. Well, what if we then add James Wisniewski with Giordano and with Brody, and we've now got Schlemko? To me, it's a different conversation. And maybe I'm just a negative Nelly, but I just feel like the loss of Giordano just spells the end of the season.
Feels like it, you know, it feels like it. And I think that, you know, that the one thing that, like, you know, that Bob Hartley in the dressing room this morning is going to say, you know, on the radio in Calgary this morning, they're talking about a lost season. And the newspapers in Calgary, they're talking about a lost season. You guys who are healthy and in the room, you go out there and prove to them they're wrong. You know, at the start of the season, those same guys that are having this conversation said, you have no chance of making the playoffs. And, you know, as of this morning, we are technically still in a playoff spot. So, you know, and they'll play that us against the World Cup. That's what I would do too. You know, I mean, you know, that's I think that's the correct motivational strategy. And then, you know, it's our job to sit back and analyze it and say, wow, I don't know. I don't see how you can replace him. Just in terms of everything that he brings, I mean, it's leadership that he brings. It's the fact that so much of when the offense was rolling here, you know, it was created by the defense. That was a model that worked here and worked in Nashville. And a lot of other teams were having, you know, poor seasons because they didn't have the kind of offense that they were getting from the defense. So, you know, you can't replace his defense, you can't replace his scoring, and you can't replace his leadership. I mean, that's, you know, like, pick one from each column, right? And so I'm with you. You know, the rational part of me that gets paid to be an analyst says this is an uphill battle. And I thought, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I thought they had a legitimate chance of making the playoffs, and I suggested that they would make the playoffs. But, you know, you lose a player like Mark Giordano, it just changes the whole equation. And the other thing is that, you know, San Jose last night finally looked like a team. I'm very interested to see where they are going forward, because you saw what happened on Monday, right? They had a practice scheduled, and they canceled it, and Joe Pavelski took everybody out for lunch, and it sounded like they just hashed everything out, and then they came back and they played very, very well against a real good Montreal Canadiens team. It'll be interesting to see if that's like a watershed moment in the season for the Sharks. Could be, and if San Jose gets its act together, you know, that will make it even harder for Calgary to hang on to that last spot.
In a nutshell, good enough from the Flames' point of view. I mean, you could do more, you could do, and time will tell, I guess. But with the team and the situation they're in, a passing grade, or what?
Absolutely. No. Because again, you know, like how many times? I guess I had Brad Treeling on the air like what 5,000 times in the last week, and eventually he always came back to, we can't lose sight of the big picture. We can't lose sight. Every time I talk to him, he says the same thing. And actually, I'm saying it back to him too. You can't lose sight of the big picture, and so you can get fooled. And you can get seduced, and you can waver off of that path. And so, you know, as I say, you know, in the next day or two, everybody's going to, you know, catch their breath and look, and they're going to say, wow, did they ever get a lot for Curtis Glencross? That's the one thing. I mean, I talk to general managers all the time. First of all, the one thing that they were saying, you know, in the days leading up to the trade deadline and then yesterday again, can't believe the prices that the sellers got. In fact, I you know, my temptation would have been to say, you know, I've got a few more players on contracts here that I wouldn't mind moving out right now, because suddenly people are giving value for players and this might be the only time I ever get it. So to get, I think that was one of the best deals in terms of, you know, player out, value in, the picks that they got for Curtis Glencross. And I think a lot of people around the National Hockey League rate it that way too. You know, in terms of Berchi, I think you probably got the maximum that you could out of there. So you've got six picks in the top three rounds, you know, depending on where Calgary finishes. That could be, you know, if they miss the playoffs, it's six picks in the top 75 of what's supposed to be a good draft. If you can have a great draft, I mean, if you can have a great draft, Calgary had a draft in 1984 where they got Roberts, Ranheim, and Suter, and they restocked the franchise and set it on the right course for 10 years. And potentially you could have that kind of draft with the number of picks that you've got this year and the quality of young player that's available. So, again, hard to, you know, to extrapolate what those picks are going to look like down the road, because there's a possibility. I know he said this publicly, so it's not, you know, sharing anything that's not there. But, you know, they could potentially flip those picks for assets in the summer, that the value of draft choices increases the closer you get to the draft. And on the draft floor, when somebody's sitting there with a guy that they love and you've got the second round pick that they can get it, sometimes you can get a good asset that you can plug right into your lineup in exchange for that pick, because somebody's in love with a player and you've got the pick that will allow them to get it. So again, it's still a work in progress, and it seems to be heading in the right direction. And this is a bad roadblock in terms of you know, what's has a chance to derail a season that's been very positive. And I guess we'll just sort of see how it plays out in this next, you know, you have to go game by game and week by week. Once they get back from this Brier trip, it'll be interesting to see if they're still in a playoff spot. If they are, I'm pretty sure that all those motivational things that I suggested that they would be uttering, they may actually start to be believing them themselves.
Last one from me. Heard a lot yesterday as deals were going down about the tank job being done by Buffalo and Phoenix. I just don't buy it. That, to me, that's a team in a terrible situation, selling off assets to get better. I don't think the Sabres are any better than they've shown, nor are the Coyotes. I mean, do you feel like there is a tank job being done by the general managers?
Well, it's both. I mean, it's a strategic plan, but it also, in part of the strategic plan is to be as bad as you can be, you know, especially in the case of Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo has gone out of its way to trade the two goaltenders at a point in their seasons when they were playing really well. Now, I get that they were their future unrestricted free agents. Who is going to 10 goal in Buffalo next year? That's the one part of the equation that gets me. I guess they're going to go into the market and see if they can find somebody. But they have stripped themselves down to the bone. And it does bother me a little bit to see how flagrant it is. I've said in print, and probably to you guys too, that the tanking has to be like a passive strategy. You cannot actively, like Ron Wilson says, you know, said yesterday on the air, which was very interesting, you know, go to a coach or go to players and say, guys, we don't want you to win that game. You put young players in the lineup, they're going to be motivated to play hard. You know, they may surprisingly win games for you. So there's no guarantee that no matter who you put in the lineup, that you're going to necessarily lose games. That was what Ron Wilson said on the air. I couldn't believe it. You know, he said, you know, sometimes it's harder to lose games than it is to win games. But the reality is, if you have substandard goaltending, that is the one way that you can be pretty sure you're not going to win very, very many games. It will be interesting to see, because Chad Johnson on the air, I thought, was pretty good about it. You know, he's going to a bad situation, but for him, this is an opportunity. You know, they don't like the other guy, Anders Lindback, hasn't been good all year. So I think Chad Johnson's going to get a chance to play, and he wants an opportunity to establish himself as a National Hockey League goaltender. He's going to use the last quarter of the season to prove to the Buffalo Sabres that he's capable of doing that. And there have been times in his career when he has showed that he has been an NHL goaltender. So, you know, it'll be very interesting to see how he plays. But, yeah, I do think that they are tacitly suggesting that we're just not trying very hard this year because we want to get McDavid and we want to get Eichel. And, as I say, in an industry where the integrity of the competition is really important, to strip yourself as bare as they have, that just smacks of something that's wrong as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you, Eric. We will talk to you Thursday.
Thank you.